Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Welcome, welcome. It is another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Marcus Paff and Reggie Rizzou with you as always on today's episode. A car fueled by the sun, closer to becoming a consumer reality. A group of monster hunters appeal to an unlikely agency for assistance. And on this day in history, London Bridge is falling down, but springing back to life in the American desert. That's all coming up on Cool Stuff. Behold the power of the sun. One of the more highly anticipated concept cars in recent memory just took a relatively sizable step towards becoming a reality. The Aptera solar-powered car, which you can see for yourself by visiting their website found in today's show notes, recently saw its first ever production-grade body arrive at company headquarters in San Diego. Now, I'm not going to lie, this thing looks like some sort of futuristic vehicle designed to appear in, I don't know, the Jetsons, Total Recall, make up a futuristic show of some sort. It has just three wheels, two up front and one in back, and boasts up to 1,000 miles on a single charge, which of course comes courtesy of the sun. This vehicle is advertised as containing 34 square feet of solar paneling that actually powers the car as it drives or while it's parked. The company stated in a recent post on X, formerly Twitter, quote, "We had so much fun last week celebrating a company milestone, the arrival of Aptera's first production body in San Diego. Now Team Aptera is back to work finalizing the cable routing, connectors, and placement of components in preparation for our first production intent builds," end quote. Per news site Electric, Aptera has ordered all necessary parts for its production intent battery packs, and other non-structural components are currently being quote-unquote validated in Italy by the company's supply partner. Per GNN, the suspension, safety equipment, and drivetrain are yet to be finalized for production models, but the company has already gone further than many before them, attempting to do this very same thing. Now, despite looking like a futuristic sports car, as I mentioned before, the Aptera's tapered backside, aerodynamic body, and arched underbelly are all designed to reduce drag, and it's by being ultra-efficient that this car can do what it's designed to do, operate on the power of the sun. Per company co-CEO Chris Anthony, back in 2021, when the company started taking pre-orders, quote, "We think energy should be used to turn your wheels. That starts with aerodynamics. In a typical vehicle, you use 60% of your fuel just pushing the air out of the way at highway speeds. So if you could take that aerodynamic drag down to zero, you'd instantly get 60% better fuel economy," end quote. Company co-founder Steve Fambro adds, quote, "Instead of having 200 to 300 parts to the body, the Aptera has four parts to the main structure, and that makes it much easier to build, track, and assemble," end quote. The company claims the Aptera solar panels will deliver 40 miles of range from charging per sunny day, but the car can be plugged in like any other electric vehicle. Aptera also maintains that its vehicles will have 1,000 miles of range because of this perfect aerodynamic, low weight, and efficient drivetrain. I'm going to opine for a minute here. The scissor doors on this vehicle definitely give me a bit of a DeLorean vibe, Reg. It's bizarre looking, I'm not going to lie, at least when you, for the first time you see it. But I guess I have to remember that any innovation the first time you look at it is going to look a little bit strange because it doesn't align with what you're accustomed to seeing over however many years we've been on this earth.
My main issue looking at it is it can have a weird design. That is fine. Can you get groceries in it? That is my big concern. What can you go shopping and put things in it? Right now, it doesn't look like there's a ton of room to get a lot of stuff done. And that's where I feel like some of these car models fail is, yeah, a few rich people are going to want to buy this. But the average everyday Joe, I think you're going to want to be able to use it functionally instead of, hey, look at my fancy car. Like, if I want to go somewhere, I want to be able to put me, my wife, and the kids in the car. I don't want to just have it be me, maybe my wife. It's got to open up a little bit.
Yeah, it's not a family vehicle. There's no doubt about it. And to be fair, I don't think they're marketing it as such. But I would be curious to know what the founder's response would be to your question of, hey, if I want to go out and buy something, groceries or whatever it might be, can I get that in here and get them home? It would appear, and again, we don't have an answer to that right now, but it would appear this vehicle is mainly for driving around, going to your friend's house, maybe going to a party, not something where you're going to have a lot of payload, or that's probably not even the right term, but a lot of things to be bringing back with you. And I wonder, you know, when the Tesla was first announced, and clearly not the same issues when you look at the body makeup there, but people have questions with any new invention. And sometimes it takes to the second, the third, the fourth version of such vehicle or such invention or innovation that it becomes something that can accommodate maybe some of these quote unquote ancillary needs in this case. Right now, you start with this prototype. It's something that people with a lot of money presumably are going to be able to pull in. And does it become more and more common with time? That's really the big question that I have, because I know 10, 15 years ago, there were very few electric vehicles of any kind on the road. There were some hybrids. Of course, the Prius was very popular in certain parts of the country. But now, as I drive around Las Vegas, the city that I reside, I'd venture to guess one in every 7 to 10 cars is a Tesla. That has become very normalized here. And it makes me wonder if something like this could at some point get to that same level of normalization, or if it's destined to just be another pie in the sky idea that sounds great in theory, but really isn't as practical as we need it to be.
And obviously this car is going to have different functions depending on where you live. I mean, Las Vegas, great. You go to Seattle where there's a lot of rain, a lot of clouds, you're probably going to be focusing on making it like an electric vehicle, not as much as a solar vehicle, because you're going to have to plug it in. There's not going to be as much solar energy coming in Seattle versus Las Vegas or LA.
Yeah, good point. And the company's obviously headquartered in sunny San Diego, so they are in a place where presumably it would make sense. Now, the fact that it can accept an electric vehicle charge is certainly notable here, but to your point, in certain parts of the country, you'd be much better off just purchasing a more traditional electric vehicle. Maybe it is a Tesla. Maybe it's a car from one of the more traditional makers have since introduced electric lines as well.
Although that 1,000-mile range on an electric vehicle charge does sound pretty nice.
Yeah, it certainly does. But if you read into the way that they're talking about this, I don't think you're going to get there exclusively on the power of the sun. You're going to have to plug it in.
Well, that's
what
I mean. If you can plug it in and get to that 1,000 miles, that's still a nice charge, nice distance to go off of one charge that you're doing overnight.
It is. It will be nice to know, at least to some extent, that if you're driving, of course, on a sunny day, you can replenish your fuel supply, your quote unquote fuel supply, a bit simply by harnessing the power of the sun as you go. I realize the technology isn't all that advanced to where you can be filling up at the same time. It's not a perpetual energy source, but you know, you can recoup some of that as you go, which is kind of cool to think about.
This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Well, the story that seemingly won't go away, that of the Loch Ness Monster.
And... Oh, you got my attention there. Ever since I was a kid, I've been fascinated with the Loch Ness Monster, at least the possibility of the Loch Ness Monster.
Well, given how much money is attached to this folklore, I don't foresee it stopping anytime soon. We talked about this on the show last year. Per a story from Inside Hook, Scottish tourism is estimated to bring in an additional £41 million per year, thanks to monster hunters and others hoping they'll be the one to see this alleged beast. By the way, that's equivalent to approximately $51 million. Well, now enthusiasts are appealing to a higher power in their search for Nessie. Not God, though I'm guessing he has been asked by some of these folks. In this case, they're requesting assistance from NASA, the Loch Ness Center, which of course is dedicated to educating visitors on the lake itself, as well as its history, and, you know, the Loch Ness Monster falls beneath that, has urged the space agency here in the U.S. to lend its expertise in a fresh hunt for the alleged monster of the deep. Of course, every year we have at least one massive hunt, which brings a coordinated group of enthusiasts to the area, and last year yielded one of the biggest searches of Loch Ness in history, a search that concluded with a hydrophone capturing loud underwater noises and several potential sightings. Again, allegedly. The latest search is set to take place on the 90th anniversary of Sir Edward Mountain's expedition, which took place from May 30th to June 2nd in 1934. If you're not familiar with him, you're not alone, but he was a successful businessman in his day, having founded Eagle Star Insurance, which went on to become one of the largest insurance firms in the UK before being acquired in 1999. And of course, he led the aforementioned search for Nessie. And that's what's being commemorated in this instance. Now, since that first expedition in 1934, there have been over 1,156 sightings recorded on the official Loch Ness Monster Register. Of course, none have yielded a legitimate photograph or any other form of hard evidence, but where's the fun in being a skeptic? Let's get NASA involved here to figure this thing out. Amy Todd from the Loch Ness Center said, quote, "We're hoping that Nessie hunters around the world will help us reach the people at NASA. We are hoping to reach them through the power of social media. We are just hoping for their expert guidance to help with our ongoing quest to get answers. We have gone to UK universities. We are hoping that experts from NASA might have some advanced imaging technology to scan the loch. We would have to sit down and talk to them about how to get it here," end quote. Well, we'll have to wait and see if NASA responds or even gets word of this request. With or without them at this year's search event, volunteers will be tasked with keeping an eye on the surface of the water, looking for breaks. They'll be briefed on what to look for and how to record their findings. And there will be a live debate with researcher Alan McKenna from Loch Ness Exploration, along with a witness account being retold. Nessie hunters can also go out on a boat with deep scan Captain Alastair Matheson. Man, he just sounds like a captain of the deep. Alastair Matheson, the skipper for the Loch Ness Project, as well as Mr. McKenna using a 18-meter, that's 60 feet, hydrophone to listen for mysterious sounds echoing from the depths of the loch, much like they did last year. Now, I have no idea what the alleged sounds they heard might actually be, but color me a skeptic. Label me a skeptic, Reg. I just don't think that Nessie's down there, or we would have had a bit more hard evidence by now.
Maybe it likes living in the deep. It only comes up occasionally when it needs to get certain food or something, but otherwise it lives in the deep all the time. There's a lot of animals or fish, sea creatures that live in the deep only. So why can't Nessie be one of them?
Well, why did it surface at that one point when that blurry photo from God knows how many years ago was actually brought about? By the way, a favorite artist of Nessie, apparently Adele, Rolling in the Deep.
Well, the food may have been scarce in the deep at that point, so it had to go up higher. And then once things get a little bit better, it goes back down. You know, I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a Captain Alastair Matheson or his Mr. McKenna.
I want him to have an eye patch, clearly a captain's hat, maybe a blue blazer in the naval variety, and a white beard. A man who's seen some things out there on the days when the sea was angry, my friend.
For some reason, I can just imagine him as people get on the boat. I'm your captain, Alistair Matheson. This is Mr. McKenna. If you have any questions or need any assistance. And then goes on.
The sea was angry that day, my friends. He's got to have like a corncob pipe. And then one day they actually discover Nessie and Alistair just doesn't know what to do. But kind of fun. Oh. I mean, I get it. You could embrace this and have some fun with it. Certainly, I think if I were to visit Scotland, I would have to go check it out and see what the fuss is in the Loch Ness Center and everything that they've built up to be dedicated to all of this. I'm not going to be a believer until someone actually brings me some hard proof. And with the way photos are manipulated today, that proof might require me going to Scotland personally and seeing this thing.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Taking a look at this day in history, as much as I want to cover the BBC announcer in 1930 saying, quote, "There is no news," end quote, for the 8:45 p.m. news bulletin and then playing music instead, I'm not going to cover that. There's not much more I can go with.
That. A news broadcaster came on, said there's no news, and then just played music? That's what you're saying to me?
Yeah, in 1930. I'm thinking he didn't want to do his job at that point. I think he was done for the night.
Oh, I like this guy's style.
One of these days, you guys are just going to turn on the podcast and speak, "There are no stories. Good night." And then just play some humming or something, because obviously we can't play certain music.
Humming. There was some stuff today, but none of it was cool. So we're out.
So, all right. So what I am going to cover happened on April 18th, 1968, when the McCulloch Oil Corp. bought the London Bridge for $2.24 million. The bridge was 1,000 feet long and had stood for 130 years. It withstood the bombings from the London Blitz in World War II. However, the modern era was just too much for the bridge, as it was slowly sinking into the Thames due to the weight of traffic. So yes, London Bridge was falling down due to the weight of cars. Now, since renovation seemed impractical, the city decided to rebuild instead. They wanted a wider, more car-friendly bridge to replace it. One city councilor, Ivan Lucken, was able to convince his colleagues that they should try to sell it instead of scrapping it. He thought it might be possible to sell it to someone in the U.S., so in 1968, he traveled there to meet with potential buyers.
I want to know, why did Ivan think that, you know what, somebody in the U.S. will buy this thing. Let's go over there and see. Hey, you guys want to buy our old bridge?
I mean, think of the joke nowadays of, "Hey, you believe that? I have a bridge I can sell you." Do you think they felt that way? He's like, "I have a bridge I can sell you."
I feel like Ivan's like, "There's a lot of gullible people in the U.S. Let's go see what we can do."
So the version he was trying to sell was completed in 1831, but other crossings have been there as well, including the medieval London Bridge that was there for 600 years and had buildings and water wells as part of it. So Londoners thought the bridge at the time was dull by comparison to the older versions that stood there. Lucken pushed it as a timeless landmark, saying, quote, "London Bridge is not just a bridge. It is the heir to 2,000 years of history going back to the first century AD to the time of Roman Londinium." In comes Robert McCulloch. He was an industrialist from Missouri who made his fortune from companies that sold oil, motors, and chainsaws. He was an interesting man, to say the least. He once told a reporter, the secret to his success was, quote, "booze and broads." So, like I said, interesting point of views. He liked unique business schemes, and in 1963, he purchased thousands of acres of land near Arizona's Lake Havasu and founded Lake Havasu City. He wanted to make it a tourist attraction, but was having trouble bringing people in. When a business associate, C.V. Wood, told him about the London Bridge being sold, they thought that might be what the city needed as a centerpiece to bring in those tourists. McCulloch even planned on making one of the lake's peninsulas into an island so the bridge would have something to span. He said, quote, "I had this ridiculous idea of bringing it to the Arizona desert. I needed a bridge, but even if I didn't, I might have bought it anyways. End quote.
This is exactly the kind of guy Ivan Luckin was looking for.
Exactly. 100%. So getting the deal was another thing. McCulloch said, quote, "We poured an awful lot of scotch trying to loosen them up enough to give us an idea of how much they wanted," end quote. So he found out that the cost to dismantle the bridge was $1.2 million, so he offered them double that amount, plus an additional $60,000 or $1,000 for each year of his age when they expected the bridge to reopen at its new home. Now, each granite brick was labeled with markers to indicate their arch span, row number, and position. It was then taken apart, put in crates, and shipped to Long Beach, California. Then trucks carried it to Lake Havasu. To make sure it could handle the traffic, they built a hollow core of steel-reinforced concrete and then covered it with the 10,000 tons of the bridge's granite stones. They did create that island, by the way, and at the end of it all, it took 3 years and $7 million to complete. It opened up on October 10th, 1971, and because McCulloch, being the person he is, the ceremony celebrating the opening had fireworks, marching bands, hot air balloons, skydivers, and a dinner of lobster and roast beef, because that was the same meal that King William IV had during the bridge's unveiling in 1831. So at least he did a little bit of research there. At the time, one British newsman said, quote, "It's a super gimmick. It's all quite mad. It could only happen in America. Only an American would think of investing that much in something as crazy as this," end quote. So once again, to your point, only in America, right? It worked, though. In 1974, the town had 10,000 residents now, and the bridge had brought in 2 million visitors in that year alone. Lake Havasu City currently has 50,000 residents. Also, by the way, a side note to McCulloch, he continued to come up with interesting ideas until his death in 1977. One of them was a helicopter-like gyroplane that would be used for commuter vehicles. Looking at some of the stories we had recently, Marcus, I would say maybe this guy was just ahead of his time, because that's kind of what people are trying to build now.
Well, he might be ahead of his time with that particular idea. I don't know that I've seen anyone else go, "Gotta buy a bridge from some other part of the world that is clearly about to fail and bring it to my town." But like you said, it worked to an extent. And oddly enough, I've never been to Lake Havasu to see this bridge. It's only about a 2.5 hour drive from Vegas. So I may have to go down and do that now just to say, hey, I did walk across that bridge.
My wife has been to it. Last year, she went with it. She met her sister there, and it was just kind of a middle ground for them to meet, so they saw that. So maybe if I can find some of those pictures, I'll post it on Facebook or Instagram or something if I can find them. And you can see some of the pictures they took of London Bridge in Arizona.
Yeah, what a gimmick, but what a way to make it work. What I am interested to know, it came from London, they shipped it to Long Beach. Okay, Long Beach is a huge shipping hub on the West Coast here in the United States. Yeah. But did you have to go, I'm curious to know the route they took. Did they come through the Panama Canal to get there?
They did. Yep, okay. They went through the Panama Canal and around to get to there. I left that part out, but that is the path that they took.
All right, that's a long journey. Now, when I was last in Long Beach, oddly enough, there was another British artifacts, not the right word, but the Queen Mary, the ship that Winston Churchill sailed on, is parked in port there, and it is a tourist attraction now. And you can go down and hang out in some of the onboard bars and restaurants where Churchill himself once hung with other dignitaries. They've got pictures of him on the wall with a big cigar, of course, in his mouth, and kind of a cool little thing. Total aside to the London Bridge here, but I'm just thinking about, all right, so clearly they got that ship, which originated in the UK, all the way to the US West Coast, which, thank goodness for the Panama Canal, because that would be quite a much longer journey if that didn't exist.
All right, we got off the rails enough here. Let's end it. That's enough for a Cool Stuff Ride Home. Thanks for joining us. You can always reach us at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. Also, like us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I'm Reggie Rizzou. He's Marcus Path. We'll be back with more cool stuff tomorrow.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pair.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.